Dominic Pangallo, candidate for mayor, City of Salem, is joining us here on MSO News Sports. Dominic, thank you for joining us and taking time to do an interview with us.
Yeah, happy to do it. Thanks for the opportunity, Bill.
Well, Dominic, as we've been pointing out in these series of interviews with all five candidates that are on the March 28th primary ballot, we have three questions, and then we have a couple of wild cards that the candidates have submitted for each of their interviews. And the three questions that we want to ask you about is, one is about the Salem Public Schools, the second is about development and affordability, and the third is, this one will be right up your alley, what's the advantage of having the former mayor, Mayor Driscoll, now as lieutenant governor, as you served as her chief of staff? So let's begin back at the beginning here with the Salem Public Schools and your thoughts and observations on the public schools and plans for the public schools.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Bill. I'm an optimist about Salem schools for philosophical reasons, but also for very personal reasons. I'm the only current Salem public school parent in the race. My girls are in third grade at Bates and seventh grade at Collins. I do think the path that our district is on is largely the right one. We need to keep a strong, positive focus to maintain that. And it doesn't mean that we're not without challenges. Like a lot of communities across our Commonwealth and across our country, the impacts from the pandemic are deep and profound for children here in Salem and for the teachers who educate them. Now, they lost learning time, but they also lost family members, friends, connections with one another. And as a parent, I've seen this myself firsthand. So I think a successful school district is one that recognizes that and really builds itself into a system that can best meet those changing needs. We do have a remarkable structure here in Salem to do that, though. We have public pre-K and early education programs, middle school redesign that's underway, early college, a phenomenal career and technical education program, the framework for social, emotional, and mental health supports through things like City Connects and Cartwheel. These are all the backbone that's going to help us, you know, kind of move forward as a district. And I also place in that same category an ongoing commitment to closing racial and economic gaps in student achievement and creating a district that elevates and celebrates students and teachers of all backgrounds and identities, amplifies the voices of caregivers and students who may have been excluded even unintentionally for far too long, and continue our goal of a teacher workforce that's more reflective of the diversity of learners that they educate in our district. I also want to talk about teacher retention, because I think that's truly a systemic problem, again, throughout our nation, but it doesn't absolve us of the responsibility to take it on here in Salem. Some of that's about compensation, but not all of it. I think we need to do better to meet the professional development needs of our teachers in a way that encourages the mentorship and long-term success of new teachers so they stay in the profession. And I think we can also attend to the mental health needs of teachers and paraprofessionals who are being asked to manage every day that behavioral issues arising from the social and emotional setbacks that children suffered from the pandemic. We think about our district and the physical spaces that we need to make sure that every class and every student is well served. And the forthcoming Salem High School project has some enormous potential to be a positive change, you know, allow teachers to do their jobs and students to learn in a new first-class facility designed for the class sizes and the technology needs of today and of future generations of learners. So it means continuing on the path laid out by the facility master plan in collaboration with the stakeholders in our school community. And I think lastly, you know, we have to talk about the Student Opportunity Act. This is the state funding formula for school aid for cities and towns. And as far as Salem's state aid level, you know, it didn't work as it's supposed to. You know, it took a decade to get the Student Opportunity Act adopted in the first place. But we need to get some fixes in place for Salem, you know, working with our state leaders and our legislators. Last year, the average Gateway City got around $3 million to $4 million in additional school aid from the state. Salem's increase was about $250,000. We were the only Gateway City to receive minimum aid. Now, the reasons for it are pretty complicated. They have a lot to do with the foundation budget, changes in enrollment, caps on what wealthier communities pay for their own school costs, pushing down the amounts that cities and towns like Salem are receiving. But that all kind of came together last year to create a perfect storm of factors that detracted from what we should have received in state school aid. So I think it's critically important that we fix that to get an appropriate and fair level of state funding for our schools. I'm proud to have the endorsement of the Salem Teachers Union and school committee members, including Beth Ann Cornell, Amanda Campbell, and Kristen Pangallo, my wife, of course. I know some people have said that the jury's still out on our superintendent, Steve Zreich, and that our schools detract from our city, but I couldn't disagree more strenuously with that. I mentor students for Leap for Education. I've helped lead the Scholarship and Education Committee. When I meet with my kids' teachers and talk with district support staff, I really do feel only pride for Salem Schools, and I think anyone who's been part of our school community or been inside our schools recently would as well.
Dominic, you gave a comprehensive answer, and I have been able to follow up with candidates on their answers during these interviews. So I just want to do that now with you, in the sense that all districts, every single district in the state, faces challenges. And so Salem faced some challenges, I'm sure, in the last 5 years when you were chief of staff with Mayor Driscoll, and obviously before that as well. They're always facing challenges. What do you think they have done in the Salem Public Schools to meet those challenges in the past? Not so much right at this very moment as we speak, but maybe it's the superintendent, the hiring of Steven Zreich. But what do you think that has been some accomplishments leading up to where we are now to turn things around?
Yeah, I mean, I can think of two things I'll just mention quickly there. I mean, definitely hiring Steve Zreich was a great move for our district, and he's been a tremendous asset. I think, we established a children's cabinet to try to bring together not just people in the school community, but agencies in the community that interact with our children. And the Our Salem, Our Kids initiative that grew out of that provided the framework for a lot of the supports that we have now in City Connects in the classrooms. And this is thinking about, you know, how we help children, not just in terms of their academic success, but also their social and emotional growth. And that was actually an extremely powerful thing to have in place during COVID, because it ended up being something that we could use to pivot towards supporting the children when they came back in and they were struggling with, like I mentioned, not just learning loss, but also the mental health challenges that came out of the separations that they had with one another, with their class, with their teachers, and in some cases, the trauma from losing family members. Yeah. And then the other, I think, success that we had was developing the career technical education program at Salem High School. It's provided some incredibly beneficial career pathways for students who, you know, we want every child to have the option to go to college, but it may not be the path for every child. So we need to make sure that we have the appropriate educational programming in place to support those students in whatever career pathway they choose. And I think the CTE program at Salem High School, the demand is high for it, and I think it's something that's proven to be a great success story.
All right, let's move to question two. This is kind of a two-part or combined type of question. It has your vision for Salem development and keeping Salem affordable. So it's more than just affordable housing. Somehow those that generally do seem to be connected, but an observation on development and affordable housing and affordability, rather.
And affordability, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll just say on housing, look, I think that we need to ensure that we have homes with dignity for every senior and family and resident in our community. And, you know, that does mean that in terms of growth, we need to right-size our housing supply to fit the demand that's there. In the last decade, there were fewer new housing units created in Salem than the average decade of the 20th century. So I think that there is, you know, some people have this perception of rapid development in Salem, but the data don't really bear that out. And we don't have enough homes to meet the needs of our residents, let alone those who want to move here. It does have consequences. We see that in the numbers, you know, that median family income increased by 8% in the last decade in Salem, but the median home price increased by almost 50%. Homes have become more expensive because they're more valuable, and they're more valuable because there's fewer of them to meet the demand for them. So right now, you know, the consequences are that we have for every four low-income families in Salem, we have one deed-restricted affordable unit. The wait list for senior public housing is years long, and, you know, I think I mentioned this before, but we have over 170 homeless students in our schools, which is a 35% increase over this time last year. So there's still a lot of work to do. And you know, we talk about development of creating housing. You know, we need an inclusionary housing ordinance and a condo conversion regulations that we can put in place to help with the creation of affordable housing. We can implement an initiative that I developed when I was at City Hall called the Right of First Refusal Program. This is where we reached out to multifamily property owners to give the city a right of first refusal to try to preserve existing affordable rental apartments before they got flipped into condos, step up enforcement of our short-term rental rules, which I helped write and get adopted, and that'll help preserve rental apartments instead of converting them into short-term rentals for visitors. But like you mentioned, affordability, and I think that's important. We need to start looking at our housing challenges as a human-centered problem, not just a building problem. There are seniors and families in crisis in our city right now, friends of my daughters whose families want to stay here and they want to be part of our community and part of the school district, but they can't keep up with the cost of living in Salem much longer. So I do think we need a coordinated human services approach based in and owned by city government, an office that centralizes our efforts around rental assistance and eviction diversion, more communication about first-time homebuyer programs, food security, utility assistance. And this isn't even about necessarily creating new programs in some instances, just growing awareness of existing ones that we do have and that people may not be aware that they are eligible for. And we also have programs that I helped create, like Salem Power Choice and the Salem Skipper, which help people keep more money in their pocket. These offer essential services like electricity supply and transportation at substantially reduced costs. And I think we need to keep those and make them more broadly available and find similar innovations that we can pursue to help people live in Salem without having to spend so much. I mean, you know, and also it has to do with helping our seniors. So many of our seniors are living on fixed incomes, and you know, we can broaden access to, we have a far-reaching senior property tax exemption program that I helped create here in Salem. It's so unique, we actually needed a special act from the legislature, which, you know, we advocated for and got. I chair the Salem Retirement Board, and I've consistently voted for the maximum cost of living adjustment possible under the law for our retirees. I think these are all, you know, approaches to trying to make it more affordable and keeping more money in people's pockets here in Salem. You know, I was at City Hall, I created a position, it's relatively new, called the Neighborhood Stability Coordinator, and I hired the person that's in that role really to start the framework of this work, to create a centralized city office focused on affordability and human services. And as mayor, affordability will absolutely be one of my top priorities, because I think of housing as more than just buildings, right? It's about the people who live in them.
Dominic, I know that the Salem Skipper came up in previous interviews, I think, with different candidates, but also with in that forum last week over at Salem State. For our listeners that are not Salem residents, can you just quickly just tell folks what the Salem Skipper is for transportation?
Yeah, so the Skipper started, I co-chair an initiative called Salem for All Ages, which is through the AARP. And one of the things we focused on was how to provide better transportation options for people. And we received a grant to start this, and then it really proved highly successful. So we went from being a pilot to making it permanent. This is like an on-demand rideshare service. Think of it like Uber or Lyft, except that it's $1 for seniors, $2 for everyone else, anywhere in Salem. It'll pick you up. You know, you might have to walk, to the corner or of your block to pick it up. You might share the van with somebody else because it is a rideshare service. But it's a way to leave your car at home and get around in a way that's incredibly affordable. And we're, as we always try to do, is try to make it as convenient as possible. It's not door-to-door service, but it is intended to provide people an option to be able to leave their car at home and get around Salem in an affordable fashion.
In our planned third question, Dominic, what is the advantage to having Salem's former mayor, Kim Driscoll, now in the down in Boston at the State House as lieutenant governor?
Yeah, I think it's a big advantage for Salem, right, to have a champion for our city in the corner office there. I think Lieutenant Governor knows the projects and the challenges we're facing here in Salem. She's probably better equipped than anyone to advocate for us on them there. You know, I just mentioned the issues we're facing with Chapter 70, the state school aid funding formula, and the need for corrections to that formula. And the Lieutenant Governor understands that issue deeply, and she knows what we need to do to address it. And the same is true for a lot of the critical projects that are on the horizon for us here, South Salem Commuter Rail Station, the offshore wind terminal. You know, the intersection between those efforts and the state, whether it's about funding or permitting or anything like that, it's substantial. So I think it's a significant advantage for our community to have our former mayor in the role that she's now in. And she also brings, I think, a profound awareness of the challenges facing cities and towns more broadly. She was a mayor for 17 years, chaired the Massachusetts Mayors Association and the Mass Municipal Association Board. But I think the Lieutenant Governor is very well suited to be a partner for all of our Commonwealth's 351 cities and towns. I'll add, I'm honored to have her endorsement in this race as well. And I think that speaks to the fact that we do share an aligned vision and set of values when it comes to Salem and our future. I'm not Kim Driscoll, of course. No one is except her, but I think Salem couldn't be better served than by having a team in both the State House and City Hall with a strong partnership and working relationship like the Lieutenant Governor and I do.
All right, I'm going to follow up on one other thing because, Dominic, I know in the city of Lynn, they've talked about rail stops and adding a rail stop down by the GE in Lynn for the commuter rail. And for our, again, listeners outside of Salem, this came up also the other night at the forum at Salem State, the South Salem rail stop, which is not there now, obviously, but a proposed stop there. That would be near North Shore Medical Center on the back end of that off of Jefferson Avenue, but if I'm not mistaken, which would clearly serve Salem State University and the hospital, which is obviously, I imagine, the largest employer in the in Salem. Do I have that right? And is that the target location?
Yeah, that's correct. It's kind of where the line curves a little near where Amazon's located now. The intention is that it's not like a full garage station like we have downtown. It's right. More of a platform stop. But it provides a way for people who are commuting to or from Salem State and from the Salem Hospital to be able to do so in a way that doesn't require them to have to drive on Jefferson Avenue or Lafayette Street, Maury Avenue, or Highland Avenue to get to the hospital. They could take the train and then walk from that platform location or bike from that platform location, because, you know, there could be a blue bike station there for sure that would allow people to not have to use their car to commute to those two places. And those are our two largest employers in Salem. So it would have a significant positive impact on, I think, traffic congestion on those corridors. And, you know, we're always looking for ways to grow access to public transit. It's a benefit to that neighborhood as well. So it's a project that's been long in development. Salem State and Salem Hospital are both partners with the city on it and prepared to, you know, make investments, and have already, you know, we've already advanced the conceptual design, and, you know, thanks to some funding that we secured from Congressman Moulton last year, we're able to advance to the next phase of the design process. But ultimately, you know, we need the leadership with the state to convince the MBTA that this is a project that they need to have on their capital plan. It's a priority, and, you know, it's something that's strongly supported by our community.
Right, and I just wanted to point that out, because, I mean, a stop like that, as the Lynn stop, it is an advantage to people, I would say, visiting the city or using the city, and when I say using, working at the city, going to school in the city, as that extra stop in Lynn that I was referring to. So, again, maybe some of our listeners, again, outside of the area, we're not totally familiar with that, but thanks for clarifying that, because, again, it did come up a couple of times in the forum last week. All right, now let's go on to our two kind of wild card questions here for you. That is one of the things that you wanted to talk about would be professional management of the city, of city government. So take us through that.
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about Mayor Driscoll, or when she was mayor, current lieutenant governor, and I think that, you know, of the many things that we accomplished for Salem in that last administration, I think one of the most significant achievements was the degree to which we were able to institute a really professional approach to city government. Our decisions are based on principle and best practices, not politics. And, you know, I was proud to be a leader in that effort. I think the professional management that made our city strong again after the setbacks and fiscal problems left in the wake of past administrations and their poor approach to managing city finances, we worked really intentionally and in partnership with many people in the community to try to build back from that. And today, Salem, you know, we enjoy a record bond rating, the largest rainy day fund balance ever because of that work that we did. The city's never needed a Prop 2.5 tax override, and I think we should be proud of that fact. When I was managing City Hall, we made sure that contracts were bid properly and transparently. Public workers in our schools and at City Hall were treated with respect. And hiring was based on qualifications, not connections. You know, Salem's a nearly $200 million operation with thousands of employees, and it requires someone with professional credentials, expertise, and present-day familiarity to lead it and manage it successfully. I created many of the policies and approaches that have made Salem a high-functioning and properly managed city, and really I want to continue that approach as mayor, prioritizing transparency, responsiveness, competence, and professionalism.
All right, Dominic, the last one, sustainability. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I'm glad we get a chance to talk about this. You know, I think that the climate crisis is really probably the existential threat of our time, and also our children and our grandchildren's time. I helped create the city's sustainability department, hired its first and second directors, and it's why I was focused with that department on advancing our climate planning efforts like Resilient Together. We have to remain committed to planning and funding projects and efforts to prepare our community for the further impacts of climate change. But at the same time, you know, we have a moral responsibility to do what we can to lessen our own contributions to this crisis. So our sustainability work really has a dual focus, reducing our contributions to the climate crisis, but simultaneously preparing for a more resilient future as we experience the impacts of that crisis firsthand. As I mentioned before, I helped to create our electricity aggregation program, Salem Power Choice. It saved Salem residents millions on their electric bills, but it also has helped us meet our climate goals. We put solar on school rooftops, electric vehicle charging stations, and public parking facilities, converted city street lights to LED fixtures, and started to change our vehicle fleet to hybrid and electric vehicles. And also, speaking about vehicles, you know, and the Skipper and programs like that, and Blue Bikes and the South Salem Commuter Rail Station, any opportunity we have to help people get around Salem without needing a car also helps us reduce our carbon footprint. You know, there are historic federal resources available right now for this work, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, but we have to pursue them. In the Driscoll administration, we were aggressive about grant opportunities for essential needs like this, and I would absolutely prioritize these funding opportunities as mayor. I really worry that we're letting them slip through our fingers right now, and I'd hate for that to happen. We shouldn't leave a single dollar of potential federal funding on the table, not when the needs are so critical. So I'm proud to have the endorsement of the Environmental League of Massachusetts, local climate leaders like Pat Gazemba and others, because they do recognize and I think hopefully appreciate that I'll continue to be a champion for a sustainable Salem. And a big part of that is the offshore wind terminal project. I mentioned that before. You know, this project has the possibility to be transformational. They're going to be creating an offshore wind marshalling and construction yard in Salem. The wind turbines will not be set up in Salem or in our harbor. They'll just be components brought in and then assembled here and then taken out by vessels to the actual wind turbine locations in the Atlantic. But this is huge for our tax base, for good jobs, and then also for our work to address the climate crisis. We might need to make sure that, like I mentioned, the CTE program at Salem High School, that the career pathways are there for this industry and to equip our students for the opportunities that this project's going to present to them, not just at the terminal itself, but also really the whole ecosystem of ancillary jobs, and secondary industries that are going to surround this. I'm prepared on day one to continue that important work, advancing this project with Crowley and CEC and the many community partners who are involved in it, and doing so in a way that gives full voice and consideration to the direct impacts it's going to have on the surrounding neighborhood. So I think this is critically important work. That's why I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. And I want to invite anybody that would like to find out more about me and this issue or my position on a variety of issues facing our city to visit my website, pengalloforsalem.com. And again, I appreciate this opportunity and hope people will get out and vote on March 28th.
Yeah. Well, Dominic, again, as we've done with the candidates, we'll obviously put a link up to your website on the post. And we do appreciate the ability to talk with the candidates. They have been fantastic with these series, a five-part series with all five candidates. So, Dominic, thank you for sharing all of this information with us. I think that voters are better informed after listening to these pieces, to be quite honest with you, and also taking the time to share with us a couple of those two questions that you think are important that were in addition to our questions. So, Dominic, again, thanks so much for your time. And again, the day to vote is the primary day is March 28th. And Dominic, thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the opportunity.
Dominic Pangallo, candidate for mayor, City of Salem, here on MSO, newsports.com.